Peter, you know, as I walked in here that I can't take my eyes off the vinyl. And as I'm chatting with you, I'm able to look at 12 albums. And then I was quickly reminded of the vinyl behind me as well. But this is absolutely incredible. I can't imagine what gets played here and the special music and artists that all the listeners get to appreciate, because some of these albums, this vinyl, I don't think you can purchase anymore. And so what an incredible collection here.
Well, I know you were quite taken to see The Clash.
Yes,
and
sir.
Creedence Clearwater.
Absolutely. Stevie Wonder on this back wall, the Bruce Springsteen Greetings from Asbury Park. I'm just taken back by some of these albums. Absolutely incredible. And the art is fantastic as well.
Well, glad to bring you into contact with it again.
Yes, sir.
You're going to do a town hall tonight. We're recording this, of course. We'll play it in a few weeks. But if you were a citizen of Las Cruces and you went to the town hall, and you might not know as much about what's going on as Senator Lujan would, what would you ask him?
Oh, goodness. Peter, you know, what I've been hearing from constituents as I've been hosting town halls, I've collaborated with some of our House colleagues with town halls as well. What I've been hearing most from constituents is not just asking a question, but sharing with me what's happening in their day-to-day lives. Right now, based on some legislation that was passed in the Congress and signed by this president, many people across New Mexico that are Medicare and Medicaid beneficiaries are very concerned, because there was an elimination of most federal funds to Medicaid, changing this program dramatically. And a lot of families are sharing with me why it matters to them, whether it's for themselves or for their kids or for another loved one, and sharing what will happen to them if this program truly disappears. And we're learning more and more about the devastation to food programs, lunches for students in schools or Meals on Wheels with seniors. And so whatever is happening in your personal life, I'd encourage people to share that and ask a question about what the policy is, whether they agree or they disagree, but just to share that as well.
I know you introduced some legislation to kind of partially undo the cuts, as it were, in health care, but you still got the same Senate and the same House that you had. Does that legislation have any chance of passing?
Peter, I believe that there's growing support for the legislation that I introduced with a few of my colleagues, which would undo all of the devastating cuts up to reductions in access to health care. And the reason I say that, several of my Republican colleagues that voted for this big bill, they call it a beautiful bill.
The big ugly bill.
People around me that I've been talking to here in New Mexico have been describing this as a betrayal. And that's how I've been referring to it.
Can we call it the big fat obscenity?
This is an obscenity, you know, and it's much larger than anything I can think of. However we want to describe that obscenity, I think that captures this piece of legislation.
You think some Republicans...
Several of my Republican colleagues have introduced bills to reverse their votes. Mm-hmm. And some of them did it hours after they voted. Several of my Republican colleagues who provided some comments or were part of interviews following this vote said why they opposed this legislation, but they still voted for it. So that's what gives me some optimism that several of my Republican colleagues could join this effort to reverse this. And if they don't, I believe that this piece of legislation will be the language, the tool that we will look at to reverse these cuts, these devastating cuts to access to health care as well, when that opportunity presents itself.
In New Mexico, obviously, this is bigger than for most other states, but it really seems as if Mr. Trump has declared war on immigrants, legal and otherwise, and maybe on all Hispanics. How do you see it?
Peter, what this president is doing is nowhere close to anything that he suggested that he would do. And what I mean by that, there are American citizens that are being detained and being caught up in this. So if you're an American citizen and you have proof that you're an American citizen with birth certificates or driver's licenses or whatever other documentation that you may have, social security numbers, why is it that American citizens continue to be detained for not just hours but days when they can prove who they are? It sounds to me like there's some ugly bias that people are just getting caught up and being put into some kind of detention as well, including so many people that may not be citizens but that are here legally with visas, or you know, whether they're students or they're DACA recipients or others, where there's legal support around them being here in the United States. And look, if this president wants to go after criminals, violent criminals, as he suggested, fine, go after them. Whether they're citizens or they're undocumented, go after violent criminals. That's not what he's doing. He's going to churches, to schools, to workplaces. It's very concerning what I see coming out of this administration.
I obviously thoroughly agree. Israel is a longtime U.S. Ally. I got plenty of friends from there. But what they're doing, what they've been doing in the West Bank, taking it over slowly but violently, and what they're doing in Gaza now, which even Israeli historians are saying is genocide. How do we use our influence with them to try to pull them back to something saner?
Mm-hmm. What happened on October 7th, Peter, with the terrorist attack from Hamas, is something that we should all push against and that we should reject completely. That violence, no matter in what form or fashion it shows itself anywhere in the world, should be rejected. I, like so many others, am very concerned with what I'll call this induced famine. People are dying. Palestinians are dying. Kids are dying. I don't know how many thousands and thousands of Palestinian kids that are living in Gaza have lost limbs as well.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason why most...
And our treatment of the hospital facilities is such that they've gotten away from, you know, trying to save limbs, and they just take them off.
Hospital facilities that no longer exist because they've been destroyed. And the ugliness around people just trying to get food, when food is able to make it to Gaza just to live. So many people have been targeted and shot. And there's that. I don't see pushback on those facts. They're all being presented factually as well. There have been several resolutions that have been authored in the United States Senate, which I've supported. And here's why, Peter. Any country that is receiving support from the United States has to follow our laws. It's plain and simple. Mm-hmm. And the number of colleagues that voted for this first resolution, I think there were 11 or 12 of us. This last resolution, I want to say that there were 27 colleagues that voted yes. And so we're seeing more concern, not just here in the United States from elected colleagues, those that are serving the Senate, but from around the world as well. And even the people in Israel, I think this last weekend, we saw hundreds of thousands of people gather to push back against what the Israeli government is doing here and what Prime Minister Netanyahu is doing here.
But 27 is still a long way from, you know, getting over 50.
It's doubled.
It's definitely an improvement.
It's doubled.
Oh,
yes,
no
sir.
Question. How can we help with that? How can folks at home help with that process on that or any issue?
Peter, it's important for constituents to speak up, whether it's through phone calls, in-person conversations, emails, handwritten letters or notes. I appreciate constituents that will chat with me at the grocery store or at the barber shop or at town halls, wherever we may be. It's so critically important. And sharing your feelings, your passions, your concerns, criticisms, critique, whatever it may be, it is all welcome and all necessary. I go back to a former president who reminded us that one of the most important responsibilities we have is to be an active citizen. And that's what I would share is don't give in and don't give up when anything is happening that you feel like, oh, it's all the same. It doesn't matter. I mean, that's when it's most important to show up and to speak up.
Let me put some urgency in that. I think we're in Germany in the early 1930s. The question we discuss on our radio show very often is, you know, can our democratic republic, such as it is, can our democracy survive this? I usually take the less optimistic view, and my co-host takes the more optimistic view. And I know that's a hard question to ask an elected official or anybody, but having asked it, are we in danger? And if so, how do we survive?
I'm very concerned with actions coming out of this administration, and I remain optimistic. I believe in the American people. When any president, Democrat, Republican, would choose to dismantle the Department of Justice, which is supposed to act as the independent top cop in America, the Department of Justice, who has a responsibility to enforce decisions coming out of the Supreme Court to ensure that they are not violated, including violated by the President of the United States. Yep. This Attorney General, Pam Bondi, was brought in to act as a personal lawyer, it feels like to me, and is being very political from their responsibility. I would argue that that's not just my opinion. That's been the observation from very neutral individuals that are very knowledgeable in these spaces as well.
Like judges.
Judges
have said that basically we no longer can trust the Department of Justice, and there are things that they would have taken and opposing lawyers would have taken as being reasonable or on faith. They don't anymore.
Yes, sir.
Well, the department.
Well, and if I could just add something to that, sure, as well, Peter, is it's not just what's happened at the Department of Justice. Look at the American taxpayer dollars, yeah, and how decisions are made about where those will be invested. The Supreme Court has ruled over and over on something called the Emoluments Clause and Impoundment, which impoundments is a taking of dollars by a president of the United States or the administration and ignoring the United States Constitution and the legislative branch of government, who are supposed to work together to make these investments with dollars. Well, there's this rogue individual now. His name is Russ Vogt, that oversees something called the Office of Management and Budget, who has said that he's going to ignore the Constitution and that he doesn't care if it's a Republican Congress or a Democratic Congress. He doesn't care what they tell him to do. He's going to do whatever he wants for the president. It's against the law.
I know. And this administration is taking emoluments at an obscene rate. You know, when you get into cryptocurrency and inviting people to pay $1 million to sit with the president for a while. The Department of Justice has always been kind of in an odd situation, that sometimes it's too close to the president, sometimes it isn't. But he's not only perverted the Department of Justice, he got rid of the inspectors general. We all know that he recently fired the head of the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which means nobody, an investor in Kuwait or wherever, can depend on statistics anymore about our economy, because he put in somebody else. He's basically, we have a Supreme Court majority that says he can do whatever he wants, no criminal liability ever. That's a slight exaggeration. We have a Republican Senate that's pliant. We have no inspectors general that the Congress put in to keep an eye on him. What if I challenge your optimism about the American people? Because the American people are wonderful. What the hell can they do?
One, they can show up and be active, protest peacefully. The reason I remind all of the listeners and everyone that whenever I get a chance to speak, Peter, about peacefully protesting, is this president clearly is looking for an excuse to expand military presence on American soil. And I'm very concerned about mm-hmm. actions he's already taken and other actions that he has suggested that he will take going forward. And the American people are showing right now with elections across the country. There's two gubernatorial races that are very important in the country, and the importance of restoring checks and balances in the legislative branch, which I believe will happen. Now, that's not for another year, sir.
Despite the extra five seats in Texas going to the Republicans?
I believe this is my illegally. Personal opinion about what Governor Abbott is doing in Texas. This notion that Republicans, they're going to cheat. That's what's happening right now. They're not waiting for the traditional 10-year census, the recount on redrawing mm-hmm. lines, or a court decision where there was a challenge to require a state to have to redraw lines because they violated the law. They're doing this for partisan advantage. No questions about it. Well, there's also a competitive U.S. Senate race in the state of Texas.
Yes.
And now you have a governor telling the people of Texas that their votes really don't matter, that he's going to carve these maps up. I don't know what he's going to do other than wake up a sleeping giant in that state. So, look, I believe the House will flip. I believe Democrats will be in the majority. Checks and balances will be restored. And that will be one of the key components to preserving our democracy, this very fragile republic, this young idea that is truly being tested today.
People don't realize that the registration in Texas is about 48% Democratic, 38% Republican, a lot of independents. And yet they have, I think it's 13 seats to the Republicans, 25 already. That's without the change. There's a segue, you know, I think obviously talking about Texas makes us think about California. And Governor Newsom's thought about, well, we'll do the same. Partisan politics, aside from all the left-right, and you'll hear this, I'm sure you have heard it from Republicans and Democrats and people who hate both parties. Partisan politics, partly it's that there's too much money dominating things, but partisan politics has gotten so far out of whack to where, you know, I'm rooting for Ohio State, she's rooting for Michigan, and they can't do any wrong. I don't care whom their coach rapes, whatever. How do we fight things that need to be fought without accentuating that deep problem?
Mm-hmm. Well, Peter, you're absolutely correct in the divisions that I'm seeing, not just in the Congress, but across the country right now. Where it's about rooting for a team as opposed mm-hmm. to having a serious conversation about policy solutions, challenges, how some decision that's made based on a vote in Washington, D.C. is going to impact someone's life, or decisions made around the kitchen table. I believe that you need to talk to people. I will stand up to push back about any policy that's going to hurt New Mexico or hurt people here in New Mexico. I'm also very open to working with anyone when it comes to making a positive difference here at home. One example that I'll share with you is working with a colleague of mine out of Missouri, one of the most conservative members in the U.S. Senate. His name is Josh Hawley. But we worked together to make progress on something called the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act.
Yes.
A piece of policy that most observers, most pundits said would never, ever see any positive votes or momentum in the U.S. Congress. And while it was in that bill that I voted against, the work that we did to make progress and build momentum over the last few years is what allowed this to be signed into law, and it helped people. So,
We should clarify for listeners that what we're talking about is some recompense, too little, too late, but at least something for the downwinders, the folks, the New Mexicans, who were too close to the first atomic bomb set off here in New Mexico, not Hiroshima. We've had some of those people on the show, by the way, and you know, it's an important issue. Yeah. Let me ask somebody else's question, because We play pickleball with a lot of people who think Trump is wonderful. And I asked one this morning when I got over there. I said, hey, I'm talking to Ben Ray Lujan today. What would you ask him? And he thought about it for a moment. He said, you know, why do Democrats hate Mr. Trump so much?
Look, how I feel about Donald Trump as a person is very different than looking at the policies that he said he would promote and he would support when he was running to be the president of the United States. Where I come from, Peter, people keep their word. It's important when you say you're going to do something.
That's
we'll
a new concept for Mr. Trump.
And if the president said on day one he was going to do everything he could to lower prices for the American people, why is it that he is engaging in this tariff fight? Some call it a war across the world. And the reason I say that is what President Trump did has been tried twice in America. It's never worked. As a matter of fact, some would argue that that the last time this was tried, it contributed to the Great Depression and the economic fallout in America. Targeted tariffs, I'm open to that if they're used for a reason and carefully. But what he's doing is increasing prices on the American people in that small space.
And he seems to have no idea of the consequences.
I believe he has an idea. He just ignores them. The same holds true when President Trump promised the American people time and time again that he would not eliminate Medicaid funding. Well, he signed it into
obscenity.
Law. President Trump also said that he would not go after nutrition programs in America, namely because it was going to hurt constituents in the southern part of America. Well, he went after them anyway. So you can't say you're going to do one thing and then do something else. That's what I would say. And so to my constituents that voted for this president that have come to speak to me and told me they supported this president, they've also told me that they didn't think he would do what he has done, going after Medicaid. Arguably because of something, Peter, that I'm sure you've chatted about before, something called sequestration that the American people became very familiar with years ago. This is now, if I could dare say this, an economic policy that was included in some budget votes, appropriation bills, that said if the national debt went up dramatically, that you'd have to go after programs that we depend on, like Medicare, and cut them dramatically. No one thought it would happen. Well, it just happened. And so all the president also said is that he was going to be a fiscally conservative president. He just added $4 trillion to the debt while he devastated these programs.
And he did that partly to maintain tax cuts for the very rich. I think the marginal rate that the richest people pay on extra income is 37%. And when I was a kid, long, long ago, but for I think most of the boom from 1945 to 1961, those marginal tax rates were 91, 92%. What should they be, and how do we get there, and what would you say to somebody who says, well, wait a minute, that's unfair, people earned that money?
I congratulate all my friends, people across America that have done well for themselves financially. I hope they do better. I don't think they need a tax break. Look, if we look at past proposals around tax policy in America, understanding that incomes state to state, that it varies on how states determine who the middle class is. The previous president, President Biden, said, okay, no tax increase for anyone making less than $400,000. In New Mexico, that's a lot of money. But okay, let's have that conversation. If you're making over $400,000 in America, well, then no tax breaks. And this was a vote that we actually put on the floor, Peter. Several of my colleagues offered different ideas. One of them said, can we agree that if you make $10 million a year, no tax breaks? My Republican colleagues voted it down. They said, okay, well, let's try $100 million a year. Is that enough? They voted that down. Another colleague offered $500 million a year. My Republican colleagues voted that down. And then two of my colleagues offered $1 billion. They said, okay, if you make $1 billion a year in America, no more tax breaks for you as well. And my Republican colleagues voted that down as well. And this last bill, you know, to all the listeners, if you're making $30,000 or less, your tax rates are going to go up under this ugly bill. And arguably, if you make $254,000 a year, your costs will go up because of the devastation to food programs, food scarcity, cuts to medical programs, Medicaid, Medicare, things of that nature. Rural communities could see grocery stores close because of the devastation of food programs. Rural health clinics could close because of the devastation to these other programs as well. And all that contributes to costs going up. In addition to the tariffs, which is really a national sales tax, this false narrative. Well,
right.
Let me be more clear. It's a lie. This notion that the American people don't pay for tariffs. No, they pay for those increased costs. It's not borne by the home country that those tariffs are put on. And that's why goods are going up across the board. So you look, just one concern after another in each and every one of those spaces.
Well, another one. I know that you took a little bit of heat online for tough questions to Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And now we've had a few months to see him in action as the Secretary of Health and Human Services. How would you assess his performance so far?
Oh, look, Peter, there are some things that Secretary Kennedy said that he would do that arguably would be good for the American people. If we're going to work together to make food healthier, amen. Healthy food available, amen. I'm on board. I've not seen that happen. As a matter of fact, we have a measles outbreak now in New Mexico, as we do in so many parts of America. I think cases in New Mexico just grew over 100. Now, this was a disease.
Somebody at Bridge yesterday, a bridge player, said she'd been over to the hospital, the ER, and there was a line she kind of indicated, from here to there, a long way, of people wanting to come in about measles.
Well, and remember, this was a disease that I think it was in 2000 that here in America, we said, okay, it's gone, and now it's back. And when Secretary Kennedy came to visit New Mexico not long ago, he didn't want to go see some of these impacted families. Well, go face them. Tell them why what's happening to them is happening to them. Secretary Kennedy also told me one-on-one, as he did in a hearing that I was a member of the committee, on the Finance Committee, that he would be the strongest Secretary of Health and Human Services for Native American communities, because Indian Health Services is also one of those responsibilities borne by that secretary. Well, under Elon Musk, President Trump, Secretary Kennedy, they terminated so many of the professionals, the providers that provide service under IHS. As a matter of fact, because of the bureaucracy that's now been created by Health and Human Services under Secretary Kennedy, OBGYN services in Gallup, New Mexico, are hard to find. It's getting worse and worse. So, look, and the last thing I'll share here is I authored a letter with several of my colleagues in the United States Senate asking for Secretary Kennedy to respond about this measles outbreak. It's now been 120 days or more since I wrote this letter. And even though Secretary Kennedy gave his word in testimony in that Finance Committee hearing that he would respond in a timely fashion to any inquiry from any member on that committee, he still has not responded. Now, I don't know if timely for him is a year, but it's clearly not 120 days because we've already exceeded that.
I certainly agree about healthy food. I don't eat processed food, and get my food at the farmer's market, etc. But the food producers are, have a lot of money. Everybody on whatever spectrum, anybody who thinks about it, is very worried about the dominance of party politics that money has, and the right wingers think it's the deep state is in real control. I think corporate America is in real control. Nobody really thinks you 100 guys in the Senate are the power. What do you say to folks? And maybe a more personal question: how do you avoid letting money overly influence you?
Well, Peter, when you say that money is the problem today in American politics, I agree with you 100%. Since the Supreme Court decision around Citizens United, another policy that doesn't get talked about too much, but the McCutcheon-Ferguson Act that was also overturned by the Supreme Court, both of them say that you can put in as much money as you want as a corporation in America to influence the outcome of an election and not have to say where the money comes from. And it's happening. It is happening. Some of these elections that, you know, it took a lot of money once upon a time, $100,000, $200,000, which was raised from voters, constituents throughout America. Now they cost millions. If I'm not mistaken, the most expensive Senate race in the history of the country was this last 2 years ago, and it was like $150 million in an election.
Another fact, more and more of that, whether it's Congress or Senate, comes from outside the actual district.
Oh, most of it is. And the other thing here, Peter, is it's against the law in America for foreign dollars to be spent in any election. Well, who's keeping track of that now? I mean, there's a whole question about that. So, one, that needs to be fixed. I don't know what it will take to overturn Citizens United other than right now Democratic members to get to the number of votes and arguably 60. But I don't know why it can't be 51 in the U.S. Senate. And so that's a position I've stated publicly before, and that I would vote to overturn Citizens United and make sure that we're able to get that money out. Now, when it comes to standing up to this influence, you need to speak up and vote and show your constituents whose side you're on. And so whether it was, you know, there was an Australian mining company that had a land grab in southern Arizona that was going to devastate the San Carlos Apache tribe, and they were going to block cave mine, which is essentially taking chunks of land until the mountain would collapse. I stood up to this when no one else did, and then we were able to get a few more folks on board, and we delayed this transfer of land for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years until the majorities changed, enough votes were there, and then they overturned this. Look at what's happening with seed production and corporate food production in America. You know, we should be embracing more of what's happening right here in Las Cruces at New Mexico State University and more local research and working with smaller farmers. One area on the farm bill that I speak up very clearly, and I'm proud to say that there's more Democrats and a few Republican colleagues that have joined me, is the smaller producers, the smaller ranchers, smaller farmers, they should get more support than the big folks, the big corporations across America when it comes to commodities and others. Now, the votes don't exist there, but I've been very clear about that, and there's pushback. But every vote, every chance you get an opportunity to speak up, to hold someone accountable or speak on this policy is a chance to push back against this undue influence that's coming from the outside. But I completely agree with one of the problems, and this is probably one of the largest problems that I see that is negatively impacting our elections in America.
One of the largest problems we face that we haven't touched on yet in this conversation is climate weirdness, climate madness. And obviously, the current administration is being idiotic about it. What can we do to try to help the world, which, you know, the rest of the world is paying attention, as you know. How can we help, despite the current administration, help on that?
Peter, we all have responsibilities on our own as well. I join you and everyone that has a concern with what the Trump administration is doing in ignoring science and actually reversing scientific discoveries associated with the negative impact to warming. I mean, there's a reason why the days are hotter. There's a reason why the forests are drier, why fire is more devastating, and the flood that follows is more devastating than that. Recently, there was a natural disaster announcement just made here in Vado, in Doña Ana County. Our brothers and sisters not far from us in Rio Doso, and then up north and in so many other parts of America, but around New Mexico as well. There's no question where it's coming from. My grandfather, my dad's dad, who I grew up with until I was 12 years old before he passed away, my grandpa Celedon, he said something very simple on the small farm that I still live on, Peter. He said, just leave things better than you found them. If you leave things better than you found them, things will be okay. And just extrapolate that with whatever the policy is, but especially when it comes to the land and it comes to water and how we're going to take care of things. So I would encourage people just to come together. The work that was done to protect the Oregon Mountains, looking at watersheds and what we're doing across New Mexico. There's some really smart people here. I mean, one of the folks that I often would look to in the past and now is the work that she did as a water lawyer, a water attorney, and the work she did for Senator Tom Udall and as a member of Congress, and even when she was a deputy secretary at the Department of Agriculture, and that's Xochitl Torres Small.
Mm-hmm.
We should listen to the experts here. We should follow the science and do things better than we're doing today. And like my grandpa said, let's leave things better than we found them.
If you could somehow go back to the kid you were on the farm and tell him you're a goddamn U.S. senator, what do you think? What do you think his reaction would be?
Oh, my grandfather would have said,
"No,
well,
yours as a kid."
Oh,
or your grandfather's either.
Well, if I would have told myself that, or my grandfather, no, he would have said, "You know, keep dreaming. Good luck. Go pursue those opportunities." I never imagined that I would be in the position that I am today, Peter. It's such an incredible responsibility. And I'm so honored to have the trust of so many people here in New Mexico. And that's what this is about. You know, it's you're empowered by the people, by the voters with a vote. And you represent everyone, including those that didn't vote for mm-hmm. you. And you have to show up and explain those votes as well. And I think that's critically important, but such an incredible honor. And but yeah, I think that my grandfather might have, you know, had some fun with me and my dad.
Said,
and
what have you been smoking?
Yeah, yeah. He would have said, "What's going on? Yeah, what's in your tea today, Ben?"
Anything you want to tell folks that I've been too stupid to elicit from you? You can take a moment on that.
I'm very appreciative of everyone that supports Radio Quetzal here. Very important, the philanthropy. One of the other areas that was recently very devastating to a lot of radio stations, television, not just in New Mexico, but across the country, and also on sovereign nations in Indian country, was the elimination of all federal funding for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And it was all partisan. Mm-hmm. But the reason I bring that up is especially with some of the announcements that kept people alive during the flooding in Vado, there were announcements that were being shared with those communities that were coming because of the investments made in these spaces. And even some of our signals, we can count on those towers with what it means and those repeaters to be able to talk to more folks. But it's a matter of looking at some of these programs that we depend on when we need help the most. And ask the question, why were they cut? What's the notion of this stuff? And I would just say, Peter, along those lines, there once was a time as well when all of these policy debates predominantly were stipulated around some facts. We may have a difference mm-hmm. in opinion in how we would address the issue or how we would vote, but there was a set of facts that then we could have a debate around. That's getting further and further away if it exists at all anymore. And so I certainly mm-hmm. hope that we can get back to that time as well, where no matter how conservative, how progressive, mm-hmm. independent, libertarian, where you are in these spaces, that we need to get back to that place. So that way we can still find that commonality. We could find the solution at the end of whatever that debate or that conversation will be as well. And I certainly hope that we're able to get back there. And CPB is just, it's one of those places.
Yeah, we're addicted to public television, both for news and just features, and on TV, some of the neat detective shows, often from across the pond. And of course, we here at KTAL, we're trying to be how the community talks to itself, and that's all the more important as newspapers go by the wayside. Anything else you want to say? I know you're going to have to run to somewhere, but
I think you covered it, Peter. I can't think of anything else. I think you covered it, sir.
Well, thank you, sir, for being here.
That's funny, Peter.
We both have a bad habit of calling people sir, which we discussed earlier.
Yes, sir.
But
yeah, I did it again. There it is.
The we is... Sir Ben Ray Lujan and Peter Goodman on Speak Up Las Cruces. in sometime in August, and we'll actually play this sometime in September. So thanks very much for taking the time, and do it again if you're back in Cruces.
I look forward to doing it again. And as we started, thank you for being so generous and sharing some of the vinyl with me today. And I think people out there, I don't know if they know something I didn't know, in that there's still some collections that may be for sale if people want to support the station. So hopefully they'll come in, but not until after I go look at some of that vinyl myself.
Well, you're invited to do so. And thanks again for being with us, sir. And thanks to Minerva Rivera for producing this.